Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel Perek Mem Aleph, Chapter 41. After being once again with Yerushalayim in Perek 40, Yechezkel is shown the outer part of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, Yechezkel is ready to step in and enter the inner part of the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash had three parts: the Ulam, the outer courtyard; the Heichal, the inner sanctuary, which parallels the Kodesh of the Mishkan; and the Devir, the innermost part, which parallels the Kodesh Kodeshim of the Mishkan. Yechezkel's Beit HaMikdash has the same three parts. He has already seen and measured the outside part, and now his guide, the man with the measuring tools, brings him into the Heichal, the inner section of the Beit HaMikdash. Pasuk Aleph, Vavieni el HaHeichal, he brought me inside the inner sanctuary. Vayamad et ha'elim shesh amot rochav mipo v'shesh amot Rochav mipo, rochav ha'ohel. And he measured the posts, which were six amot, 6 cubits broad on one side, and 6 cubits broad on the other side, and that was the breadth of the tent. Yechezkel stands at the opening as the man measures the pillars on each side, and then continues to measure the length and the width of the room, which measures 40 cubits by 20 cubits. Then they go even further in, pasukimel, ubalet pnima. They go inside. Vayamad el hapetach shtaim amot, vahapetach shesh amot, varochav hapetach sheva amot. And he measured each post of the entrance 2 cubits, and the entrance 6 cubits, and the breadth of the entrance was 7 cubits. The man continues to measure the entrance to another even more inner chamber, and then the length and width of it, before announcing to Yechezkel, Vayomer Elai Ze Kodesh HaKadashim, this is the Holy of Holies. Rav Alex Israel points out that Yechezkel would never have experienced himself the Kodesh Kadashim. He is just a regular Kohen, and that is the domain of the Kohen Gadol, and only on Yom Kippur, although according to at least Rashi, it is Yom Kippur. And Yechezkel is still only a regular Kohen, so even if it is Yom Kippur, Yechezkel wouldn't really be able to go in. So he stays out while the man just points it out to him, but it's the man who measures it. And the Kodesh HaKadashim measures 20 cubits by 20 cubits. They continue measuring each part of this great room, the side chambers, which are multi-storied, the thickness of the walls, which have side chambers behind them, the overall size of the room, which is grand and spacious. In fact, in this spacious room, Yechezkel is shown the Mizbeach. Says Pasuk Kafbet, V'hamizbeach eitz shalosh amot gavoa, v'archo shtaim amot, u'miksotav lo, v'archo v'kirotav eitz, v'daber elai ze ha'shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. The Mizbeach was made out of wood. It was 3 cubits high, and its length was 2 cubits, and its corners, and its length, and its walls were all made of wood. And he turns to Yechezkel, and he says, this is the table that is before Hashem. Note that the Mizbeach is not made of gold or copper, but of wood. Abarbanel comments that the word wood, eitz, is related to the word eitzah, advice. Says the Abarbanel, the whole point of this Beit HaMikdash is to recognize that everything comes from Hashem. Everything you sacrifice on the Mizbeach is ultimately given to you by God. And take a lesson, take an eitzah from this. The Mizbeach is not covered in gold, because gold represents what we have, our riches, while the Mizbeach will only be made of plain wood to represent that really everything we have belongs to Hashem. They then get to the space above the door and the wall next to the door. These walls are described in great detail. Pasuk Yurchet, Va'asui kruvim utmorim. Utmora bein kruv lekruv, ushnaim panim lekruv. There's engravings on the wall, and these walls had kruvim, these, I guess you would say angels, but really they're just kruvim, and they had angels interspersed with palm trees. So it was a palm tree in between each kruv. And then the pasuk tells us that each of the kruv had two faces. Pasuk 19, Upnei Adam el hatmora mipo, Upnei Kfir el hatmora mipo, Asoy al kol habayit saviv saviv. So this kruv has two faces, one on each side. The face of a man is on one side facing one of the palm trees, and on the other side is a face of a lion, a young lion, and that's facing the other palm tree. So it was every other was a palm tree, and then this kruv, and then another palm tree. Meha pasikaf, meha aretz admal hapetach, hakruvim batzmorim asuyim vikir hahichal. From the ground to above the door were these kruvim, meaning the whole wall, and these palm trees. That's how they were engraved on the wall, and thus was the wall of the temple. The engravings on the wall remind us of a number of things. Firstly, the decoration of kruvim and palm trees was taken from Bayit Rishon, from Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash. We read in Melachim Aleph Perek Vav, Melachim Aleph Chapter 6, that kol kibrut habayit masav kala pituchei miklaot kruvim utmarot, and he carved all the walls of the house with carved figures of kruvim and palm trees. And Shlomo also had upiturei tzitzim. He also had these flowers, milfanim v'lechitzon, from within and without. In fact, when Yechezkel took his first trip to the Beit HaMikdash, he encountered this idea of a kruv. If you remember, in Yechezkel's first vision, it was the kruv that gave him the coals, that gave the man in linen the coals to use to destroy the people of Yerushalayim. And here, the kruvim are mentioned as the decoration on the wall alongside the tamarim, a symbol suggested by Rabbi Alex Israel. The tamar, the palm tree, represents tzadikim. Tzadik katamar yifrach. A tzadik will flourish like a palm tree. It is this symbol that gets transplanted into Yechezkel's Mikdash, this kruv interspersed with tamarim that comes both from Bayit Rishon, so Yechezkel would have recognized it, also is a holdover from his vision, and also perhaps represents tzaddikim. Something that is not transplanted from Bayit Rishon, however, is the amount of gold that Shlomo used in his Beit HaMikdash. This pasuk that's the next one after the one that I just read, the pasuk that follows the carvings on the wall of the kruvim and the palm trees and the flowers in Malachim is Ved karka habayit tzipa zahav lupnima v'lechitzon, and he covered the wall, the whole floor. Shlomo overlaid it with gold within and without. So this is, already we're noticing a theme. This is similar to what we saw with the Mizbeach. The lack of gold in Yechezkel's Beit HaMikdash is significant. While his building is much larger than Shlomo's, he does not have the same symbol of wealth that Shlomo does, although he does maintain the carvings. The carvings are representative of ideas, either the tamar, which perhaps represents tzaddikim, the kruv, which is an important symbol to Yechezkel, perhaps from his last vision, and we'll also speak about it a little bit more. But the gold, he doesn't have, neither on the floor nor on the Mizbeach. And I heard an idea from Rabbi Gamliel Shmalo along these lines, that Yechezkel's Beit HaMikdash, not only doesn't it have gold, it doesn't have any texture or color. There's no ivory, there's no marble, there's no silver. It has length and width, but Yechezkel's Beit HaMikdash doesn't have height. It's as if Yechezkel is walking through blueprints. Perhaps that's because texture, color, and gold are not the point of this Beit HaMikdash. In fact, it is the opposite. Yechezkel was worried about the corrupting nature of the gold of the first Beit HaMikdash. If you remember his last vision, that's what he saw when he went to the Beit HaMikdash. He saw people who were corrupted. And this Beit HaMikdash is going to be pure without the possibility of being corrupted by money or the oppressive society that he saw in his first journey to Yerushalayim. This Beit HaMikdash looks not to impress, but to influence, to help people understand who they are and what their ultimate purpose is. And now I want to talk a little bit more about these kruvim themselves, because they're not the same kruvim that Shlomo had etched onto his walls. Yechezkel's kruvim have two faces, a lion's face and a man's face. And Shlomo's are just called kind of a generic as kruvim can be. And these two-faced kruvim, the lion's face and the man's face, reminds us of Yechezkel's vision of Hashem from the first chapter, where he sees Hashem surrounded by his chariot, and each of them had a different face, two of which are the lion's face and the man's face. And what we have here is this intrusion in the description of the Beit HaMikdash of Yechezkel's earliest vision, to remind the reader of how far Yechezkel has come and how far he still has to go. The first time he saw these images these kruvim with more than one face, he was in galut, anticipating the upcoming disaster, seeing a vision of Hashem's chariot moving out of Israel. Here, when the two faces reappear, they reappear on the wall of the built Beit HaMikdash. The disaster has happened, and Yechezkel is having a vision of Hashem reappearing, a vision that's imprinted on the walls of the Beit HaMikdash, a vision that he needs to tell over to the people, to tell them not where they are, but where they can be. And perhaps also we're supposed to in some way draw a parallel between these two visions of Yechezkel, both which include angels of God and many faces on one being. Perhaps the vision of the Beit HaMikdash that closes Sefer Yechezkel is linked to the vision of Hashem's chariot that opens the Sefer. Yechezkel is an onlooker in both visions. In both, he follows and he understands the vision, but we're not sure if he understands his vision or not. We, the reader, are definitely confused when we try to understand both the details of chapter 1 and the details of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yosef Kara, in fact, ends his commentary after Parak 39 of Melchemet Gog u'Magog, claiming that it's impossible to explain the details of the Beit HaMikdash. And we already saw the Abarbanel that says it's really just Eliyahu who can help us understand this vision. B'nai Israel, when they come back to build the Beit HaMikdash, don't follow Yechezkel's vision when they build the Beit HaMikdash for the most part, as it was too hard to understand and to implement. The vision that started the Sefer was one of despair, but the concreteness of the measurements and the emphasis of the details show Yechezkel in that first vision that it's a true vision. It's an overwhelming vision. So too here, the emphasis on the details of the Beit HaMikdash proved to Yechezkel and his listeners that there will one day be another Beit HaMikdash. The task of Yechezkel as the Tzofeh, the one that sees, is not over when the Chorban happens. He counts the years of his vision in this one from the Chorban to tell the people, my visions of Hashem have not ended. It wasn't just a vision of destruction to tell you about the upcoming destruction, but to tell you also what happens after the destruction. We can be redeemed. There can be this glorious Beit HaMikdash in our future. And for us, the reader, reading the details of the third Beit HaMikdash reminds us that Yechezkel's visions are still unfolding in the world. Hashem's chariot is still not settled back into its permanent location. And the specific way that the third Beit HaMikdash will unfold is still a mystery, just as Hashem's chariot is a mystery to Yechezkel. All we know is that it is concrete. It's just that we don't understand it. And it is the vision of the one who sees not what is here now, but what is yet to come. Thank you for learning together. Le'ilu Nishmas Barbara Atlas Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.